Coming up on today's episode, a new battery swap company makes waves, crypto enters the music world, and SN10 is a total success. Until it wasn't. Let's get ludicrous. Hey there, and welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about all the cool future stuff happening today that's going to make tomorrow... totally ludicrous. I'm a Joe Scott with the Answers Joe YouTube channel. With me is Tim Dodd, and I'm blinking.
Hey, it's me, Tim Dodd, the everyday astronaut from the new Mars Studio B, and it's almost completion. And with us is, in a very dark closet, Ben Solins.
What's up, guys? It's Ben Solins. The I changed my channel name. Now I'm the everyday astrophysicist. You know, completely original. no one's ever come up with that.
Your channel is now Emonomics.
Emonomics, yeah. Emonomics. And with us, as always, are our Discord members and friends. How are you all doing? Tian, Casper.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Everybody.
Thank you for your patience as we took a little extra longer to get set up today.
I got stuck behind a crane in traffic for an hour and a half. Have you guys ever had that happen?
No. No. I have got stuck behind an ox before. That was kind of odd, but different story for a different show. Anyways, if you want to be one of the cool cats and kittens that listen and watch the show live, you can learn more, sign up, join the family at olfpod.com/Patreon. And of course, if you're watching on YouTube and you just want to jump to whatever story you saw in the headline or whatever thing, check the description or the little play bar below. You'll be able to do that. And just kind of skip around so you don't have to listen to the entire show if you're short on time. You know, you could also quit doing whatever's taking up your time so you can listen to the whole show.
Stop working.
Duh.
Priorities, working. People.
Priorities. Yes. Okay. And here we are, guys.
I feel like there's one story that we kind of just need to jump into.
Believe it or not, I have to say, okay, listen. I know that I'm sure we're all talking about SN10, but I don't know which one I'm like still thinking about more and more excited about, because we also had a really big announcement from Rocket Lab this week with
their new
big rocket. Oh, yeah. And they had the best reveal. I mean, they took it to like peak Apple reveal days for promo and PR. So I don't know. Which one do you guys want to talk about first? Rocket Lab SN10. Or SN10?
SN10. I don't know. We do Rocket Lab.
Fine.
Well, split. All right.
You choose.
I've got a SpaceX pulled up. So let's actually start there with SpaceX. So yesterday, Wednesday, SpaceX successfully launched, and I can actually say successfully landed their Starship SN10 prototype. Now, it did land in a single piece, which was new for them with these larger prototypes. Let me fast forward here. I'm just kind of scrub through the Twitter preview. But yeah, again, it followed almost the exact same flight profile as SN8 and SN9, where it just goes straight up to about 10 kilometers or so, hovers there for a while, just hanging out, absolutely no big deal. And then it turns off its engine and it falls out of the sky. Now, of course, on ascent, it's starting off with 3 Raptor engines, just exactly like 8 and 9. Shuts down to 2 once the thrust to weight ratios, they're at minimum throttle in order to not keep going faster and faster because it's draining fuel. They will shut one of the engines down as a way to throttle and then throttle the other two up. Now, we did see
What is that? That's what I wanted to ask you about. When I saw the launch, I was like, what is that gas coming out? Because normally you don't see that, right?
I saw that in the last one.
Yeah, there's been some puffs of the Raptors, kind of one some of the Raptors are a little bit running fuel rich, most likely, which is where it would have the chance to burn some carbon like that from the methane. What you see there is normal. That's actually just oxygen dump. They are dumping out some liquid oxygen. They're basically using liquid oxygen as like a ballast to keep it heavy and the proper weight for ascent and all that stuff. So they're draining it as they fly quite a bit, which seems weird, but yeah. So it went up to apogee, as we are pretty used to now. They've done that successfully all 3 launches, no problem. But it's so crazy. It just sits there and hovers. And even though the clouds are moving, I think almost the clouds moving gave you a better sense that it's hovering, because you normally see that little trail of the stuff dumping and you think that it's moving, But when you see the clouds moving with it, you're like, oh, it's stationary, you know, and the that's the clouds in the sky. So it's literally, it literally just hangs out there at apogee. And then they do the kick maneuver, and they use that single Raptor engine to flip it, you know, help flip it down nose first, and it goes into its belly flop. And just like 8 and 9, this was perfect. SpaceX, it's really impressive how well they can control this portion. Here is dumping a ton of liquid oxygen. So they really do lighten it up. Like, I think Declan Murphy from Flight Club kind of ran the math and figured out it seems like they're dumping approximately, I don't remember if it's like 20 or 30 tons of oxygen.
Sorry, I just have to call out that Andy in Discord pointed out that they did the kickflip at exactly 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
Of course they did.
Of course.
Of course they did. I'll bet the thing falls for 69 seconds too. I haven't timed it yet, but
I thought the
quite at 10 kilometers. They put it at just the right height so that the fall would be 69 seconds.
That would be hilarious. Let's wait. Let's see when the engines actually light up. We're at 5. So that would be at, it'd be 5 minutes and 29 seconds would be, that's close. I think it's more like 5, like, I think it's like 6:20 or so is when they, but let's see here.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway,
the clouds really helped, I think, give a sense of what was going on this time. Because when it's just a pure blue sky, it looks like just a, almost just like a photo or something, just like a render. It doesn't even look real, you know? So it was cool that there were clouds.
Yep. Exactly. So there it goes. Almost missed, almost had the 69 seconds. Maybe they'll do a, So here is where we're going to see the flip maneuver. The, of course, the belly flop to tail down landing maneuver. And the big difference this time was they went with 3 Raptor engines for the whole flip. Not just, I should probably have this pulled up on YouTube so I can actually scrub through it. But let's watch it in real time anyway. Here comes the engine. They lit up all 3 engines. They kind of stagger the ignition. Bing, bing, bing. This is the coolest shot in the world.
It is. It doesn't even look real. It looks like some kind of computer.
Especially right there when they have the glint of the engines.
Yeah.
Oh, it is
so baller.
Absurd. Just the most surreal
now,
looking thing.
They landed only on one?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. They landed only on a single engine, and that is by design. Now you'll notice it landed, and it landed pretty hard. You
landed,
can tell
landed
it even
pretty hard. Yeah, it had a bounce.
It had a bit of a bounce to it. Yeah. So it definitely kind of shuddered when it landed. And once the smoke cleared, we could tell it was still standing. And it remained standing for, I don't remember how long. We'll have to look at the
8
live
minutes,
stream.
I think.
Yeah, something
it was,
like
it
that.
Was,
a little less.
Yeah,
than,
it was 5 or so minutes at least.
Well, you were wrapping up, I remember, that I didn't even know that it if anything happened afterwards until you tweeted it, and then I pulled your video back up because I'm like, oh, cool, fine, great, it landed. I did watch for 30 seconds because it was pretty leany, right? It was like the leany tower.
And on fire.
Yeah. And so two things that aren't ideal.
Well, so I was watching it, and my wife was sitting next to me, and it landed, and I'm like, woo, and we're both laughing at how much you're freaking out because that's always fun. And then... You know, I guess we started talking and I turned and looked at her and we're doing this thing and I looked back and it was just like smoldering wreckage. And I thought that you had pulled up the footage from SN9 and were like reviewing that or comparing or something. And I was like, oh, I guess he, wait, what? And then I looked in the chat and everybody's like, what the hell? And anyway.
Oh man. Yeah, it was, I kind of saw it coming a little bit in the sense that like, I even said it on air. I'm like, this thing, remember these landing legs suck. And like they are not good landing legs. You know, I knew that we were going to be seeing one. I knew this was, we've seen almost every example so far of the predicted failures, which is like, you know, the first one where it just hit too hard, the second one where it flips too far and lands on the other end, and now one that lands and then blows up afterwards. Like we've seen the whole gamut.
Feel like we do need to, just for the case of anybody who did not actually see this.
Yeah.
We're just kind of skipped right past the fact. It landed.
Okay.
It sat there for a good 5 minutes or so and then just exploded.
Let's see.
Bye-bye. Let's hear. Let's get right to
now. Did anyone else have better footage of this? I mean, I think you probably had the best footage of anyone, right, Tim? I mean, SpaceX, maybe, if they had their cameras rolling.
Oh, SpaceX.
Yeah, they had that pad camera going.
Oh, they have cameras galore. I know they've got great footage of this. Yeah, there's also some really good. Lab Padre had really good footage of it. And so did And so did the NASA space flight also had really good footage as well. But one thing that we haven't quite, well, maybe it'll be up actually by the time I'm talking right now. Let me double check it. Cosmic Perspective, you know, we put out remote cameras. Our remote camera feeds were dying on us for whatever reason. We think our RoboCam like moved too far and slid and broke something and it like knocked some wires loose or something. And so our cameras, some of our remote cameras were dying. But we did get slow-mo of that. The most incredible, let me see, Cosmic Perspective. Let me see if they actually have it posted yet because he's been working on it. Okay. Wait, no, that's 9. Dang it. Okay, so I guess they don't have 10's explosion yet, but it is the same shot and it is absolutely astounding.
That's a great name. Is that your channel? Up. Or is that...
Cosmic Perspective is Mary Liz and Ryan who help with everything. Like, we kind of like co-partner. So they're driving the telescope and we set up remote cameras together and we just share each other's footage, you know, in videos. It was kind of like a collaboration and yeah. Let's see the, let's see. Okay. So, what else? Okay. So let's show what exactly went wrong here. And let's go to slow. We'll basically go frame by frame here with the SpaceX feed. So again, the flip looked great. You know, the flip is the thing that has not quite gone this well so far. So there's one engine ignition. So you can see they stagger it. Here comes the second engine ignition. Look how quickly those things ramp up. Now, that one looked a little funnier. The flame was a little bit wonkier. I'm not sure if that was the one that was causing them problems. And, I guess maybe because the third one was igniting behind it. So that's probably why it looks so weird. But, yeah, so it basically goes 1, 2, 3, like all back to back. You know, just single engine. Then the other two staggered really close together, I feel like. But yeah, there we go. We see it flipping. And then again, this is the part that is maybe the most gorgeous thing. And look at that.
Yeah.
Don't tell me that doesn't look like CGI.
It just needs the J.J. Abrams anamorphic flair, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't think you'll have a hard time finding people that won't say it looks like CGI.
Well,
for sure.
I think most people will say it does.
It's insane. If I hadn't seen this with my own eyes and I just saw this, I'd think it's from a movie, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So here we go. It's beyond its flip and it needs to do that in order to correct for the horizontal movement. And it's still running on all three engines, which is a little more unique. We thought they were going to go three engines, light three engines,
and two,
shut one
right?
down immediately. So they'd only use two through the flip. But apparently they decided we're going to try all three this time. And they did.
Yeah.
And immediately, yeah.
And then they go down to one. That was surprising to me. I thought they were going to go from three to two.
I thought they're going to go from three to two immediately before the actual flip really begins even. And then shut down and go from two to one for the landing. But now notice when the second engine shuts down, it is not the happiest thing in the world. There's a lot more residual flames. And people are pointing out that some of those flames are actually coming from what appears to be kind of the fuel port or something where there's continual flames coming out of the rocket. So even as it's falling here, you'll see there's a substantial amount of flame, which looks like it has a source right there. That venting is likely methane actually leaking out of it still.
Hmm.
Is what a lot of people are kind of thinking now.
And how big would you estimate that flame is based on how big the Starship is? Like how tall is that flame?
Oh man, that flame is almost, you know, a third of the way up the rocket, so it's probably at least like, mm-hmm. you know, 15 or 20 meters high. I mean, that's a big flame.
That's like a 6-story building, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's something like that. It's like, or a 4 or 5-story building. I mean, that's big. You wouldn't want to be near that flame.
Some people in Florida right now just, you know, talking about their bonfires on the beach as a joke.
or Texas, you know, this is Texas, baby. They
okay.
People like big fires. Texas A&M, you know, they're big. Don't they do that big thing? Is that them?
I think they got rid of that after, like, they had some big disaster and a bunch of people died.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, that was.
That's why you don't do that. Don't do this at home,
They just kept getting bigger and bigger. But yeah, so.
No, it was pretty ridiculous.
It was extra ridiculous. Let me pull up. I want to show you guys. I think it was Brady Keniston from NASA Space Flight posted a really cool thing where you can just see how much it was translating. It almost performed this S pattern. Let me see this one because it was really, really, really cool. Where is it? Okay, so yeah, or Jack Byers' image here too from NASA Space Flight really shows how much this vehicle translated. First, so obviously it's falling in mostly vertical. You can tell it's being carried by the wind a little bit, which is why the rocket flies a little off to the right or to the west initially to fly into the wind, I'm guessing. And then on the way back down, the wind's going to kind of carry it back to the left. But right on target for where they need it to go. The engine's light. You can see how much it translates over. Once it gets down near the end, notice it starts crawling back. It actually has to translate back. And this is not how the, you know, SN8 and 9 basically flipped and then were more or less straight down from there. And this is likely just because they, you know, lit up three engines and it translated so far. But this is something they can all tune in their software. You know, they can tune this to be slower, faster. They could translate more from the side if they want to and make it so they don't even have to overcorrect. It's really interesting to see them kind of hone in on this and try and make improvements in this landing profile. But yeah, for the other big thing is only three of the six landing legs actually locked in place. The landing legs are just garbage. And that's
now, what do you mean by
fine.
Locked in place? They're like, they actually came out in time to land, or like they...
Yeah, they came out.
They collapsed once they landed.
But some of them were like flopping around as it was landing. Okay. I gotta wait until I can get the footage from Cosmic Perspective when Ryan's slow-mo footage up close like that. You just see them dangling there, not locked in place, clearly incapable of taking any kind of force, you know? So, yeah. And Lab Pottery's camera, too, is really good. I couldn't find that as well. But, yeah, it's so the big... At the end of the day, this was a huge, huge success, really. I mean, they clearly demonstrated what they need to demonstrate, right? I mean, they've figured out how to do this flip maneuver. They figured out how to get it tail down. Looks like they need to slow it down a little bit more because it was continuing to basically fall at about like 15 miles an hour is what Scott Manley estimated. And same with so like 25 kilometers an hour, which is a little too spicy. But you
that's
know,
a good sprint.
That's yeah. I mean,
right into a wall.
Right, right. Let me just pull up Scott's video here real quick because he has it. Check out this frame that he did. He showed basically frame by frame how much it fell, and so he was able to calculate the approximate speed there. But yeah, let's see here. And where is, somewhere Scott Manley found, there we go, there's Lab Speed. So Lab Padre had an awesome view here. Check this out. You can see the legs and you can kind of see them dangling a little bit. So literally only landed on three of its landing legs and it landed pretty hard. So
yeah,
they've got some work to do, of course, but they really, really figured out, you know, they figured out the hardest part and they've successfully completed. This is another big check mark in the check mark things to do for Starship. I think 11, they'll probably refine it even more, you know, maybe try to bleed off a little more velocity. Maybe they'll land on two Raptors. We'll see that the two Raptor landing, it'd be at very low thrust in order to be able to do that because it's pretty close to empty, you know, by the time it lands. And two Raptors at minimum throttle would be quite a high thrust level. But it might, you know, they might be able to do that. So we'll see, I guess.
And what's the deal with 15 is the next one after 11?
Yep, 15's after 11. 15 and is why? Being...
They I don't
just,
get why.
They had a few, mostly because they're changing a lot of the way they do things and they just didn't want to even bother or waste flying and building and continuing to build old hardware. You know?
Oh, it's like, okay. So the number...
I'm guessing they'd already... Sorry, go ahead.
I'm just not understanding the numbering sequence, I guess.
Well, they had parts for 12, 13, and 14. You know, and basically just comes off as like, here's your ring sections, and they had some rings, but these rings are now outdated because they're 4 millimeters instead of 3 millimeters. You know, it had, you know, little internal tweaks that we probably don't know about from the outside.
Got it. So like, they're moving. Even, yeah, they're moving really fast and building them all out.
Then they can fly them.
Yeah, and then when they flew one of them, they realized, oh, actually, scrap these next three.
Yes, like it's not right. even worth. That was even before SN8. We were seeing SN15. So before they even flew one, they were already realizing like, we can make this better, you know.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So it is sequential say, though.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just thinking that they probably kind of already have a roadmap for the improvements that they wanted to make up through. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know, 2025 or more.
Right.
And, and then when they gathered the data that they needed from 8 and 9 and now 10, they were just kind of like, well, we don't need those in between. We already know what we need to do for 15 and
exactly
just jump ahead.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Like I'm sure they're just at this point they're feeling like they're getting ahead of themselves, you know. This is the wreckage from this morning. I just did a quick little live stream next to it. It's kind of splayed all over the place, but it wasn't as big of an explosion as 8 or 9. There were way, this is quite a bit of rocket.
Almost looks like a beached whale.
It totally does. It
get
totally
out the dynamite.
But yeah, I mean, it was it was honestly a huge success. And I'm not saying that as like a SpaceX fanboy. It's just like that. I mean, they're demonstrating more and more things that they need to demonstrate and figuring more and more out. So it's, yeah, the boom did feel really big this time, but maybe it's just because Studio B is a lot closer than the hotel. So I don't know. It was like, it was crazy. It shook like crazy. Yeah.
So RIP SN10.
Rest in pieces. Copyright strike.
I feel like it was dun 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 dun, and then boom.
Yeah, yeah. It was that's a little not happy enough. That sound effect there. We'll have to call up the sound effects department and see if what they can work up for next week.
Maybe make that part major. Bah, 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 bah. Yeah.
Well, so. With the previous ones, there was this whole like, was it a success or was it a failure? I feel like this one we can definitely say it was a success.
Yeah.
Oh, huge.
Yep.
Huge.
Yeah. I think the only other thing that I would have liked to see would be a softer touchdown, you know, one that's like
and
really
not
slow.
Explosion.
Yeah. So, Tim, well, the explosion, you know, if it had tipped over because it was like windy or something, but or whatever, I wouldn't have cared, you know.
Yeah.
But the fact that it did come down so hard that it was still on fire and things like, you know, there's still parts of it that are like, man, this thing is still a little bit jank, but they're proving out the things they need to prove out at this point, because there's just things that they don't care about right now. You know, they're not trying to, you know, make this a perfect vehicle yet. They're not trying to get to the point where they're like reflying these things over and over. They're just trying to kind of get stuff done, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Huge success. Tim, I had a question for you about, how people will survive the belly flop maneuver. My idea or thought was, and maybe this is a why don't they just create a sphere inside of it that you are in and the entire rocket can rotate around you like a gimbal, so to speak.
We've talked about this on the show, Ben.
Well, but do we know if this is real or am I just pie in the sky thinking of...
Well, I think the chairs could easily all gimbal and counter, you know, like just swivel, you know, a single axis. And really, the forces aren't that great. It's like 2 G's. Like roller coasters are way more than that.
Well,
way higher forces on a roller coaster.
Yeah. What's 0 to 60 in a Tesla? It's like 1.5 G's or something?
I think it's getting close to that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
So you'd feel it, but
like
it wouldn't
over
kill
a G
you.
Of acceleration. Oh no, not at all. No, not
Got
at
it.
All. It'd probably make you really sick if you're rotating like that and doing all that. Like it'd be like a roller coaster ride. But it's not going to be. It's definitely not going to be anything that would kill anybody. Yeah.
Got it.
Well, I was thinking like what kind of parallel to that, but like the experience of actually sitting in this thing and coming down. There's the G factor, but also as it's free falling, I don't think you would be weightless because there is resistance it's coming down pretty slow. So it would be like a quarter G maybe or something as you're sitting there.
Well, if you are not accelerating, so if you're at terminal velocity, you would still feel, how would that work? If you're at terminal velocity, you'd probably still feel a full G, right?
But it's not terminal velocity for a person. It's terminal velocity for this wide surface.
Well, but that is capturing a lot of air. Pushing up against you, you know, it's
right, right.
Yeah,
and so
you would still feel some weight.
Oh, you definitely feel weight. You'd be pinned to your seat pretty much like you would on Earth. Well, here, let's find out. Let's find out what the actual G-force would be. So, flightclub.io. And we will go to data visualizations. And let me...
Did someone say data?
All right. Where is this? Starship. There we go. Go. Not a blank canvas. And let's run the simulation. And we can actually see... Just... Yeah.
I have no idea what you're doing right now, but it looks so cool.
So this is, let's see, delta V, drag coefficient. Where is the acceleration?
Just so you know,
okay,
I have
go.
Never felt dumber
Zoom.
Than looking at these charts.
I like charts.
So here is the falling G-forces of Starship. So
is this what Flight Club is? Is this website?
Yep.
Oh, I had no idea.
Flight Club is just a data visualizer and simulation, basically, of flights and flight profiles and stuff of rockets.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. Okay, now we can actually kind of see it. Okay, so this is engine cutoff here. It falls. It's peak G's during deceleration, during free fall.
During
descent. Because obviously at some point, the atmosphere is... You're not at terminal velocity. You're still accelerating. The forces haven't equaled out yet. So, at that point, you're not at terminal velocity. Your forces are unequal. So you're going so fast, but the drag is actually the drag is greater than gravity pulling you down. So you're actually slowing down. You're not nulled out. Once you're nulled out though, and at terminal velocity, then you're pulling about just over one G for the rest of the thing. So what is this though? Trace one. Oh, that might be where they hover. Is this? Hang on. Maybe I'm Starship. Huh. Wait, this is... Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't be weightless is the point.
You would not. No, you would not be weightless. But so I'm trying to figure out what is this? Is that the burn? That might be the landing burn. I don't know. Anyway, yeah. At peak, the most Gs you'd experience are 2.3, and on average you're around like 1 or 2. Yeah.
Okay.
So not bad. Not bad. Yeah. Would you guys do that? Once it's safe and
your pants would still be ruined one way or another, but
mostly just because if those engines go wrong at any point, for now.
Yeah. I doubt I would ever, even if I had the opportunity, ever. Don't think I would.
Yeah.
I am such a wuss at all that stuff. Like I get sick launching in my car just from a stoplight. Like I don't need to do this and ruin everyone else's day. That's why that's basically what would happen.
Yeah. What about you, Joe? Would you actually want to go on Star? Like assume that they've flown it 100 times and they've demonstrated 100 successful landings in a row. No big deal. Would you do it?
Mm-hmm. 100 in a row?
Yep. 100 flawless landings.
That's actually a good question. That might be around the threshold. I might need more than that, though. Yeah, maybe. I pose a question about Falcon 9. Like, how many landings have they had of the first stage? Would you feel comfortable being strapped to a first stage on a landing? And the answer is pretty much no from anybody. It's like, well, how is this any different?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The one difference is in theory has multi-engine out capability, so there are different portions in the landing flip where they could lose an engine and maintain. The Falcon 9 doesn't really have that option. If they lose that center engine, it's toast.
But also you have a escape capability, right, on a Falcon 9?
Not if you're just sitting on the booster. If you're just riding the booster for fun, that's kind of what people are talking about. Like what Joe's theoretical thing is, that you're just hanging out. Yeah. But this brings up a good point that, like in Discord, Andy Law is talking about how this week, I don't know if you saw that Yusaku Maezawa, who is funding the Dear Moon project, released a video saying that now they're taking submissions for 8 people to be able to join, not people that he wants to choose, ask them. He wants to see if 8 people want to go with him. And so you can submit your video and actually ask to be part of Dear Moon now, which is new.
Some people will do it, and God bless them. And I wouldn't be one of them. Not in some of those early flights. But, I mean, you know, 50 years down the road.
Right, yeah. Right.
I'd walk in and get wheeled in a wheelchair. And
it'd be like my grandma in autopilot. She's like, it doesn't even comprehend what's happening, you know, because when she was a kid, radio was like the cool new technology that you could have, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, I've wanted to pose the question to you guys for a while, like, should Blue Origin ever start actually putting people on a new Shepard in, say, I don't know, 20 years? Would you want to do that?
Hmm. Oh, new Shepard, no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we've landed with parachutes a million times.
That's not the mega giant one. That's the smaller one that just goes up and down a bunch, right?
Yeah.
And does nothing but that.
and they have never had any problems with, and yet they still have not put a person on it. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I probably would still have to get paid a lot of money to go do that. Yeah, I probably wouldn't put up any of my own money or even for free go. No.
Okay, so let's just keep going here. What about the vomit comment?
Mm. Yeah.
No?
I'd do that.
Not a chance for me.
All right, for those of you that don't know what the vomit comment, that's that plane that it's kind of the pet name for the plane that NASA has, where they'll fly it in a parabol, like a parabolic arc. And when you're kind of in that, as you're going up and starting to fall back down before you get to that point where you're changing direction, you'll experience weightlessness for like up to 30 seconds or so.
Yeah.
And oh, it's that's not always it? The I thought it was like zero-G. For a few minutes.
No.
No, it's just a little bit at a time. Seconds. Yeah.
Does it go up and down a bunch, or you literally just get 30 seconds for the whole time?
No. Yeah.
You like go up and down times, and up and down and up and down. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Until you lose your lunch.
We would all experience weightlessness for 30 seconds, and everyone else would experience my vomit flying around the entire cabin during
Hence
that time.
The vomit comet. Yeah. You can still do it in Russia. Russia has zero-G flights. I think there's still zero-G
in
the United States.
Yeah, there is. It's out by Las Vegas, I believe. Yeah.
NASA project company.
Of course it's near Vegas. Of course. Yeah. Because every
it's
dumb
just a
thing
ride.
Like that is near Vegas. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've debated whether or not like we should try to do that sometime, like do our Ludicrous Future weightless event or something. But it
I'll
sounds like
it.
It'd be a two-person thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't go. I'll do it from the ground in one of the deprivation chambers. That I can do. You know, where you feel weightless in the salt water kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That
wire yourself
cool.
in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, Simone Yetch has done it, and so has like Emily Calandrelli. I know a handful of people that have done it, so that'd be pretty fun.
I got one of my biggest regrets. I got asked by National Geographic to join them on a vomit comet thing, and I turned it down because I took some really bad advice, and it wound up being something like Veritasium was on there. Yeah, Derek from Veritasium was on it.
Was
and,
Physics Girl there? I feel like she went on this one.
Or maybe that was the one that Simone is on.
Yeah.
Somehow I got asked to join those people, and I didn't know that they were going to be there. And I said, no, probably not. And then later I was like, what was I thinking? It's like my biggest regret so far from my YouTube career.
If that's your biggest regret, you're doing well. You're doing well, Joe.
That's true. So. Yeah. That's a good point.
Speaking of doing well, how's Rocket Lab doing, Tim?
They're doing well. How about you guys?
Okay.
So this was, I had to triple check because, you know, I knew it was the, you know, something first, you know, but I was like, is it March 1st or April 1st? Because
they have March
Rocket
Fool's
Lab,
Day in New Zealand.
Yeah, apparently Rocket Lab dropped the biggest surprise, honestly, on us on March 1st. Out of nowhere, a beautiful video.
So you, Mr. Insider, did not see this coming.
No comment.
Come on.
I think it's Rocket Lab New Zealand. Here, I'll pull up the actual YouTube video because I realized
he's sitting here faking like we had no idea. Big shock.
Hey, I don't know. Maybe
we still need to ask them to change their logo. I still think we need possibly some copyright strikes that we can send their way.
Oh, yeah. No, I think they beat us to it. So anyway, they're going through, Peter's talking about all their new stuff, you know, blah, blah, blah. They've got this.
Talking about how they do what they say they're going to do.
Yeah, we're gonna do everything that we want to do, and we blah, blah, blah. And Peter's saying on video, he's like, I've got some business to take care of, because of course, you know, it's he famously said he would eat his hat, or that, you know, he's, yeah, I said, like, I'm never going to build a bigger rocket, you know, in the, he said, we'll never do reusability. And then because of that, he said he'd have to eat his hat, which is a saying where, like, you take back your words is eat your hat. Mm-hmm. So when he started pursuing reusability, everyone's like, are you going to eat your hat? And he's like, yeah, I'm going to eat my hat. And so this was the event of him eating his hat. And this is just the greatest video. He's literally chopping up his hat, putting it in a blender. And his face is just too perfect. I mean, the lighting, yeah. Everything is just brilliant about this. The music. And he literally puts some of the fibers of the hat in his mouth. And of course, Peter Beck is the CEO of Rocket Lab. And he said, there's a couple things I said we'd never do, like reusability, but we're going to build a bigger rocket too. And then he drops another bomb. He says, it's going to be human certified.
Yeah.
So those are two things they said they would never do, which is build a bigger rocket and never fly humans. And Neutron is going to be capable of doing that. So he was actually eating his hat inside the fairing of Neutron.
So how just real quick, from a filmmaker, video producer perspective, so well done.
Yeah,
Because he's sitting there and you're looking at the blender and the hat and the whole thing, and that's what you're focusing on, and you don't really look behind him. It's just like a set or whatever. And then, like, as he stands up, those COPVs enter the frame, and you're like, that's a fairing.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like, whoa. And that's when he reveals that it's a bigger rocket. And
he's like,
and you're just
the,
like, wow.
Steve Jobs of the rocket world, man. He's excellent.
That was Steve Jobs level. That was good.
Yeah.
That was, in my opinion, like, just one of the greatest things, greatest presentations of Rocket Company. I mean, better than when Elon does the Starship stuff. I mean, this was just the cool. This just got people excited, got people talking. I'm so proud of them for their team. And his personality is just so great.
Tell me about the rocket, though, because all I saw was this, and then I was like, you know, moving on. I've known nothing about it. So what is it? How big is it? What's the deal?
It's a good-sized rocket. It's very similar size to Northrop Grumman's Antares rocket, which is another rocket that launches from Wallops, Virginia. It's one of the other vehicles that provides commercial supply for the International Space Station. So it's previously been SpaceX's Cargo Dragon capsule and Northrop Grumman's Antares with their Cygnus capsule. So or the Cygnus spacecraft. So it's very similar size to that. So it's 4.5 meters wide. So it's actually wider than a Falcon 9, because Falcon 9 is 3.7 meters wide. It is only 40 meters in length. So it's not nearly as tall as the Falcon 9, which is 70 meters. But you'll notice it does look an awful lot like a Falcon 9. It's got little landing legs down there. So they are going to be propulsively landing this thing.
Oh, really?
That was surprising.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Yeah, and wasn't it just last week I was saying that or something? Like, how come, you know, we're all doing reusability. No one's even trying to do propulsive landing. Here you go. They must have watched the episode.
Of course they did. Yeah. They whipped that video up quick.
And they did it really fast.
They did it really fast and came up with these renderings in a real hurry. But yeah, it's got 8,000 kilograms, so 8 metric tons to low Earth orbit. That's very healthy amount. That is square and like, that is a very competitive, good place to be. It's not as high performance as the Falcon 9, which when reused, like Starlink satellites are 16,800 kilograms, so over twice that much. But, you know, I mean, putting up that much payload is substantial. Now, people have some questions like, that's almost too low for most spacecraft. It could probably fly like a Soyuz-sized spacecraft if you wanted to put people on top of it. But, you know, this is also just the beginning of this rocket. They might expand it out. They might make it bigger and certify it to fly a larger spacecraft. They might build their own lightweight spacecraft to fly a person or two for, you know, tourism or something. We don't know any details on that, but it runs on Kerolox. So it's the same thing as the Falcon 9 and the Electron, which is, you know, RP-1 and liquid oxygen. And we don't know anything about the engines that are going to be on it, really. You know, they talked about it a little bit in just their Kerolox engines. But yeah, pretty darn awesome.
Would SpaceX ever like sell them Raptors?
I don't think so. No.
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 But that's typically how it kind of works, right? Like Boeing and all these guys, like they buy specific parts from different companies and stuff, right?
Yeah, the traditional way of doing things is you build the fuselage and you buy the engines, basically.
Right.
You know,
right.
But the vertical integration is something that has been very, very popular with SpaceX, and then now Blue Origin doing vertical integration, and Rocket Lab all producing everything in-house.
Yeah, and it seems like they're, you know, able to do it much faster that way, which is an interesting approach, because a lot of other industries it doesn't work that way. You know, like Tesla's actually similar, where they like make their own seats, and like nobody makes their own seats, you know.
Right.
Bosch makes everything for everybody, you know.
Everybody, yeah. Well, we should mention that, you know, Raptors of course run on methane, and so that's a totally different fuel. So Raptors wouldn't ever work with Kerolox because of the coking,
but
and
Merlins or something. Yeah,
I mean, yeah, the Discord's talking about, you know, potentially Merlin or something. But Casper has a really cool rendering here that I'm going to pull up. Casper Stanley, check this out. So this is a rendering showing you how big the little tiny Electron is versus the Antares that we're talking about. Like I said, it's very close to the size of Antares.
Yeah. And it's even wider than a Falcon 9, isn't it?
It's wider than a Falcon 9, so 4.5 meters versus 3.7.
It's a chunky
boy. The Falcon 9 is a lot bigger than people realize, though. It's a big, big rocket. And now all this stuff is tiny compared to Starship, but...
Yeah.
It's still super exciting news, and the big thing that they're touting here is this is going to be a mega constellation building machine. So they're really trying to hit the market with these, you know, mega constellations. They're probably realizing the economics for them if they can sign up a couple customers that want to deploy 1,000 or 2,000 satellites or something, and if they can really just nail the payload size ratio to the payload lift capability and do that as cheap as possible, they really might knock it out of the park. And I you know, they said that they can fly, I think it's something like 97 or 99% of all satellites flying that this rocket would be capable of flying.
Nice.
So I love it. I love it.
Well, yeah. I mean, how fast and how much has the rocket industry grown and shifted in the time that they created the Electron? You know, I mean, his original idea of like small sats, micro rocket kind of thing, we're not going to grow from here. It's kind of like after a while, it's like, oh, okay. So financially, economically, business wise, we need to adapt to be more, you know, functional. And so it makes sense.
Yeah. It does, you know, and I feel like one of the big things for them is, you know, they predicted that small sats would be a big deal. They are a big deal. Satellites in general are shrinking. But one of the things that's becoming more and more and more obvious is the ability to do rideshare and huge constellations of multi-satellites. So I think they're just shifting their tone a little bit there to be able to provide, to be more competitive in those regions. Yeah. But man, it's going to be... I've always said that I think they're going to be the ones, definitely the kings of the small sat launcher, and I think they're putting themselves in position to really just be around for a long time. And they went public this week. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
here in in the U.S.
Yes, you can buy Rocket Lab stock because legally they're a U.S. company.
Oh really? Order to fly missions for U.S. companies or.
And their headquarters are actually in the U.S. Well, not their headquarters. Their aviation and engine building are done in the U.S. And they ship those computers and the engines, the ITAR-sensitive things. They build them and develop them in the U.S. and then ship them to New Zealand where it's all, it's mostly so they can, fly U.S. military things, NASA payloads and things like that. And also tap into all of the assets that the U.S. has for those.
They just have like an empty office in a completely empty building with their name on it somewhere, right?
We're a U.S. shell company.
Yeah, these like shell companies and all that.
Open up this door and just a poster of a factory, and you're like, don't go in there though, but there it is, you know.
Just walk through the paper.
So I love that theme because it plays into the thing I wanted to talk about, which was battery swaps and reusability of electric cars. But I don't want to cut you off early. Was there anything else on that we missed?
So you're looking to segue. No, I think that's pretty much it. Like I said, they did go public. One of the bigger rocket companies to go completely public like this. So you can invest now. Currently, it's under VACQ. So Vector Acquisition Company currently is their ticker name. And then they will be changing it, I think, to Rocket or I don't remember. What was it? I think it's Rocket. And they'll be changing that in Q3, I think, the ticker name. So you can invest right now in VACQ if you want to be an early investor in Rocket Lab.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that whole, you don't invest directly in them. They have this sort of shell company, not shell company, but I forget what it's called.
The acquisition company.
Yeah. The SPAC, they call it special SPAC. Purpose acquisition company, how like everyone and their mom is going public.
yeah.
You know, I did announce on Twitter that I'm going all electric in June, so I am waiting for Wall Street to send me my money. You know, it seems like this past week, every automaker and everyone under the sun is like, we're going to be all electric just in time to comply with every government regulation saying we must be all electric.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm all for it. But yeah, at the same time, you look at it and you go, well, yeah, you want to stay in business, right? Okay. So you have to keep doing the things.
Well, speaking of electrons, batteries hold electrons.
Ooh.
Oh.
Man, those electrons are heavy, let me tell you. okay, so this is cool. I wanted to bring this up because this is something that we've, I guess, seen talked about a lot before, but it never kind of really materialized. And that is that there's a new startup doing battery swaps that are completely autonomous. I think you can show the video, Joe, if we do get copyright, whatever, we can knock it out. But I'll describe what it's for people that are just listening. Imagine it's like a little dock that you drive into, almost like a car wash kind of a thing. You pull into these two on these pads, your car raises up, and it swaps out the batteries with fresh ones. This way, charging here from zero or from whatever to full would take about 10 minutes. And this entire thing just needs a connection to the grid, and it can be installed anywhere with about two parking spaces size. So
what?
Yeah, so it's kind of amazing. And the one gotcha about, so they just got a bunch of VC money. They already have five stations, I think, in the Bay Area. And then from there, they are also, they already have contracts with Uber. And I think the idea really is that this isn't really as much of a consumer product as it is a fleet rental business product. Mm-hmm. So if you have, Ubers or something like that are rental cars, you can like have a car come in, swap the battery out, the other ones go in, start charging, and then the car's back on the road. So you could kind of have these kind of constantly revolving here, and it's completely autonomous. So literally like you just pull the car in and, Bob's your uncle. It's done. The catch, the hitch of, because when I first saw this, I'm like, how is this possible? How are you going to do this to my Tesla or my Nissan Leaf or whatever? They replace the battery that's in the car that the battery comes with, or that the car comes with their batteries. So they have a modular battery technology that replaces the existing battery technology that enables this. So that I see as a mega downside, but also a potentially huge step forward, because what I see could happen here, if you did want consumers to adopt this, this could not just become this one company that does this, but there could be like an open standard for it. And imagine cars being released that support these standards. Just like in the early days, way early days of like digital cameras, if you remember, Sony had their own SD cards that only worked in Sony's and whatever, whatever. Mm-hmm. And eventually that all sucked, and there was like a standard for an SD card. And now every right. device you know of supports SD cards, and there's different formats for it. So I could see this technology not being this one company owns and dominates the thing, but they might be the ones that bring into the light a new standard of designing the batteries so that they can be swapped. And Tesla and Ford and Audi and everyone else making electric cars, they don't have to care about battery swap technology. They just have to make sure it's compatible. So I love the idea. I think they've got some VC money. They've got some customers. It's a viable business as of today. But there's this massive challenge that, like, without changing the battery out from your car to their battery, it just won't work. So whether or not the companies make and adopt that, I think is a big, big question. But if they do, we potentially could see a future where literally these, you know, charging an electric car takes, you know, 7 to 10 minutes, and you can do it anywhere, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I would, now, I'd go just for some standard charging ports.
Yeah.
If we're talking about standardizing things, how about we start there?
Yeah, it's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my big question with this whole thing is still, of course, it's something that I'm sure someone will come up with an exact model for. But, you know, how do you, especially this, how do you pay for this when you're not paying the electric car company anymore directly? You're paying this third party that's swapping batteries. Now, are you like renting the battery from them? Are you like, what's that look like? You
know, subscription model?
Yeah, I would.
Is it a one-time fee for $100? Like what? How?
That would actually be cool.
I don't know. It gets. Yeah, like if you just need an emergency, like I have to fill up now. Can I just come swap out my battery and it's a $50 charge or something, you know, or $100 or whatever?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I didn't find those details in the article here about their launch, if that's the plan to offer one-time upgrades or a subscription, unlimited upgrades or whatever. I think all those things would be figured out and probably be determined by what people want, right? Like... So I think customer demand would drive that probably. But one thing that I didn't mention that was kind of neat here is that as battery tech improves, so could your existing car. So like, you know, the battery that your car came with, let's say it's 250 miles range. Well, 5-6 years from now, if all of a sudden solid state batteries are out and prevalent and easy, and now those are getting 600 miles range, bam, you've got it, you know? So this allows for more flexibility, I would say, in the technology's evolution. But yeah, I think you're right, Tim. The pricing of how this would work. Because yeah, maybe some people are like, cool, I'll use it in a pinch, but otherwise I'm just going to keep my battery all the time. Right. I don't want to do this except when I absolutely need to. And maybe that makes their business model not as lucrative. I don't know. Yeah, a lot of questions still.
I definitely don't think that the cars that are on the road right now are designed to have those connectors be jarred, connected, disconnected over and over and over. You know, sure, maybe 5 times, 10 times, no big deal. But imagine doing that 100 times, 200 times, 1,000 times. I know those are not designed for that. You know, it was not in the intention of the cars when they built them, was like, let's make sure this is a connection that can do this same thing over and over and over and over. And so I don't know. I mean,
well,
I,
and isn't
I'm
Tesla working on the whole battery as part of the frame?
Yeah.
Right. I'm getting that wrong.
Yeah. So I see this as like, I want this. I definitely think it makes a ton of sense. I hope that there's some car companies that design and integrate with this, even though this thing can do it all. I just don't think we're quite there yet, but I love the concept and I hope that it works out.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a fleet thing, like you said earlier, Ben.
Exactly.
In 20, 30 years, when there is autonomous cars and it's more of a subscription service kind of thing, people don't own their own car so much anymore. If you had an autonomous car company that was driving around like Uber, you know, was just driving people around, they could just swap out batteries like that instead of having their cars off charging for hours at a time or whatever. I could definitely see something like that.
They could design all the bits, like you're saying, Tim, specifically to work in these cases.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it's cool. I thought, you know, that's why I wanted to bring it up, because I thought it's pretty forward looking, but it's not so forward-looking that you're like, oh, yeah, you know, like the Mercedes Avatar car thing, where you're like, okay, whatever, dude. Like, that's just, I don't know what that is. This is like, I could see this, you know, it could be yeah. real, so.
Mm-hmm.
And the
mm-hmm.
company's called Ample, if you guys want to look. Also, we'll have it in the show notes there.
Cool.
And that might come in a day when cars don't even have steering wheels.
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
man.
Much less the new Model S.
Yokes.
The new model what? Yokes on you, Mars Volt.
That's pretty good.
So the yoke is real, and NHTSA wants to talk about it.
Okay, what do they say?
Well, there's a statement here. Apparently, they told Tesla Roddy this, that the NHTSA is aware of the recently launched Tesla yoke steering yoke in certain Model S vehicles. We requested and received information from Tesla about the steering yoke, and we remain actively engaged with the company during our review. NHTSA, as it's called, routinely engages with auto manufacturers and suppliers to better understand the new technologies and features they develop and introduce to the U.S. fleet. That's saying nothing to me. I don't. that was like
we're aware of it. Basically.
Yeah. And then okay. So then there's some other comments here. They say that they cannot determine if the steering wheel meets federal motor vehicle safety standards. We will be reaching out to the automaker for more information. That was the original statement they made, I believe, in February when they first came out with this. So,
and remind us, NHTSA is National Highway
Traffic
Safety Administration. Okay, in the U.S. Yeah,
yeah, and it's pronounced NHTSA. You'll hear NHTSA. I hate the way that sounds. Anyways, saying NHTSA. And I didn't see if they had an actual statement on whether or not it's safe or not. I think they just had a statement that they're like, are now talking to Tesla about it. So, you know, there it is. They're reviewing it. We have seen photos of it actually in a car. There have been some spy shots out there. Shout out to the Kilowatts guys that are like hawks on the factory. But yeah, so it exists. It's real. And you know, I don't think it's that crazy of an idea. I don't think I'll like it, but that doesn't mean it shouldn't exist, because there wouldn't be a lot of things out there if that was the standard for it, right?
Yeah.
I just want it to be an option.
Yeah, definitely.
It is an option. It is.
But a legal option? Like, how's that going to work if NHTSA is like, hey, you legally can't do that.
Oh, but there are cars with yokes before, no? I mean, if you buy, maybe not. I don't know. I mean,
new
the Roadster.
Cars?
Yeah.
I guess Ferraris, like some Ferraris have like, I don't know.
Yeah, it could totally be a thing where you, so the same thing with the mirrors, right? A car, as far as I understand, automaker can't sell you a car without mirrors. But there's nothing to say that you can't remove the mirrors and drive without them, so long as you have another way of like seeing what's around you. So there's this concept of like, oh, maybe they'll sell them to you with mirrors and then you just take them off, you know, that kind of a thing. So maybe it's one of those things where they sell it to you with it on there. Oh, and by the way, you just, you know, just unlatch this here and boom, now it's a yoke if you want it to be a yoke.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like those trunk dividers and some supercars and stuff. We've talked about that before. Where
right. Yeah, the Bugatti Chiron has a little piece of metal there just because they didn't want to put a light in it. No, they didn't want to put an emergency latch in it to unlock it. So
yeah. Oh, you know, why don't they just like put it a light or a latch? And
why don't they just...
It's my favorite time of the week.
It's YDTJ.
Oh.
So I got a few here, a couple from Twitter, but this was from my own personal Discord, Mr. Timo Berlin. Thought I'd bring it up. I didn't really have an answer for this. So he says, this has been bugging him for a while. Why don't they just have 12-volt batteries in electric vehicles? Why not tap off the battery pack and step the voltage down? The best part is no part. Leave out the 12-volt battery and you save yourself a lot of money. say you make 1 million cars a year. This goes kind of long. Save 1 million cars a year, save battery costs. You do the math. The only reason I've heard so far is that you need to be able to start the car to charge it. But if the battery pack is completely flat, you'll need someone to tow you to a charger anyway. Once they're there, they use a jumper cable to start your car. Blah, blah, blah. Is anybody else following
that? He's saying, why don't they have a 12 volt, or why do they not have a 12 volt?
Because I thought they did.
So the original one, I think he left out the not have 12 volt batteries.
Yeah.
Yeah, the second part says less, but leave out the 12 volt. So
actually, it says why do they just have 12 volt batteries?
Oh, why do they just have? Oh, you're right. Yeah. Why do they just?
Okay, so why do they have 12 volts?
Yeah.
Right. I have an answer
for
this, but
why don't we start? Yeah, Joe, why don't you start? I'll go, and then let's have Ben, because this is Ben's world.
Ben's world. I just figure for redundancy. Why put all your eggs in one battery pack when you can put a couple eggs in a smaller battery?
Hmm. Yeah.
They run off eggs, right?
Well, I think the answer is, I don't know if they all do anymore. I think Tesla's been working on removing the 12 volt system and having not having. I thought that was a thing they were trying to do originally with the Y, was not have any 12 volt pack anywhere in there. But I don't know if. I think there is something about the redundancy of not having all your electrons in one basket type of thing, you know. And I don't know.
So. I've asked my friends at EV West about this as well, so any insight I have comes directly from them. You know, I'm not an expert at electrical engineering, but when I looked into this before and talked to folks about it, the concept was it's sort of like a voltage regulator, and that there are a lot of electronics that don't need 300 kilowatts, you know, that would destroy them, and so you want a more low voltage battery to charge lower voltage electronics. Now, the ironic thing is that, and there was the shot of the guy that did this in Oregon, I think, where I was looking to hack my car one day because, you know, that's what I do with them. And I was like, can I put a 12 volt outlet in here or 120 volt regular outlet in here and have it connected to the main battery pack? So I can just charge another car, albeit at a low rate. And he said, no, because the battery pack is DC. You have to have an inverter to switch it to AC, to switch over to the other car, et cetera, for your electronics to use it. But the 12-volt battery can do this. And when the 12-volt battery gets low, it pulls energy from the main battery pack. So the 12-volt battery is more of like an intermediary. It's not really like a separate thing that totally lives on its own. And so this guy in Oregon did this where he actually connected. So my story, you could do that. You could put a plug in there that's connected to the 12-volt battery, really simple wiring there. And then the 12-volt battery, when it gets low, pulls from the main battery pack. So you essentially have the full battery pack at your disposal. You could charge another car or whatever. But it can cause all kinds of problems. Do not do that. And the guy in Oregon did this essentially because they had a major power outage. He found a way to wire it up to, I think, his heater or something like that, his space heater or something like that, to keep them warm because they didn't have power. And it just destroyed the 12-volt battery. And then Tesla told him it voided his warranty in his car. And they explicitly list this in their warranty documents as something, if you do this, we will not, so they wouldn't even replace the 12-volt battery in his car. My understanding is that it's much easier to connect things to that than it is to the main battery pack, and that I don't think you would get around having to have extra parts. If you were like, cool, screw that, I have this giant battery anyways, well, you can't usually connect just regular electronics to DC power. You have to have a way
that's
to switch
down anyway.
Yeah, so you're going to have that piece anyway, and that's what the 12 volt battery does. And also the 12 volt battery is just much better for other lower powered electronics, which is essentially everything, right? Because the amount of power you have in a battery pack is so enormous, the only thing that really needs that much power is an electric motor that's, you know, yeeting you from 0 to 60 or something like that. So that's why I would say, but you know, there's probably more to it than that.
We'll probably see some changes in the future, though. But yeah, what other? You said there were multiple. Why don't they just, Joe?
Yeah.
Is this true?
Yeah. So should I end with the fun one?
Just again.
I was about to say part two, but you beat me to it. All right. There's one that's a legit question, and the other one that's just kind of for fun. So I'll leave the fun one for last. But this is a nice shorty. If Raptor development is being so finicky, why don't they just try using BE-4s for Starship?
Whoa.
This is from Samuel Voss.
If Raptor, read it again. If Raptor design is being so finicky, why don't they use...
Everybody's just laughing in Discord.
BE-4. What's a BE-4? Is that...
That's the Blue Origins.
Blue Origin, right.
Which is going to be on ULA's Vulcan and on Blue Origin's New Glenn, their big mega rocket.
Does it run on methane?
Yep.
It does. Okay.
Yep.
They don't
because...
But it's
not a full flow stage combustion engine.
It's closed cycle, but not full flow, correct?
Yeah, okay.
It's a pissing contest between billionaires. Come on, we all know this. Has nothing to do with the technology.
Well, so it, but the BE-4s, correct me if I'm wrong, have not actually flown in anything yet.
Correct.
Raptors at least have, so they're actually further along, maybe?
Raptor that, what?
Is the Raptor further along, is it fair to say, than the BE-4s?
I think that's totally fair to say. It's flown and had long run times, and the BE-4, I mean, if you think that the Raptor's too finicky, we don't know anything about BE-4. We don't have any, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, as far as we know, we've heard that it's been hard for them to develop, especially hard for them to do. I think they're doing full-length burns because they're getting ready to fly it on Vulcan, and they're going to be able to fly it on Vulcan supposedly by the end of the year. But Vulcan doesn't need to worry about relighting and reuse at all. So they might be developing it and just saying, oh, this would be good enough to throw it away, you know? But, yeah. So does that answer our question, I guess? Is like, just simply, is it actually any further along? And it's a lower performing engine, lower thrust to weight ratio, lower specific impulse, lower gimbal range.
Are the Raptors being finicky? I mean, do we know that they are being finicky?
Pretty fair to say.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, yesterday they had to scrub because on the launch pad, one was producing too much thrust before, you know, when they try to ignite it. Like, they're still finicky beasts, but they're still also relatively in their infancy in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. It seems like it'd be more work to integrate the other ones, assuming that there was even a good enough reason to do it.
Or an option. Like, that's not, it's just really not an option, I guess.
Yeah. It's just some billionaire beef.
Yeah, and people need to remember, like, it's not, engines aren't just something you just, it's not Kerbal Space Program. There's not just a plug and you throw an engine in there. Like, the engines are designed around the vehicles and vice versa.
Yeah.
You know, there's very few engines that will fly on multiple rockets, very few. We, you know, I'll talk about that in the Russian video that I want to get to someday in my life. But yeah, there's not a ton that fly around on different vehicles. They design the rocket engine for the rocket, typically.
All right. One more? Or no?
Yeah.
Ooh. What is
this? We're looking at a graphic.
I'm not even sure how to interpret this.
Is this the first graphic? Why don't they just? The first multi... Where we go multimedia?
I don't want any words here. I don't want any words.
Sorry, audio people.
Yeah. This is funny.
So...
Okay.
From what I'm gathering here, this Gavin Price guy shared this and he called it the early drawings of the Starship landing profile. I think that's a joke. I don't think this is a real sketch that was done at SpaceX or anything. And then Veronica Remondini. Yeah. Put a little weebly wobbly guy on there. Too.
So are these two different ones or?
Yes.
I'm confused.
I think she's responding to him. Or just shared it. I don't know what's happening here. Or maybe that's just a screen. That's just a screen. No, that's his post. Okay.
I'm very confused. But, okay.
Well, that was my point. Right. So there you go. Why don't we?
Why don't they not just do that?
Well, we can answer the question. We can answer the question. Why don't they just land on their side and then flip it upright later? We can answer that.
That would be hard to do. It'd be very hard, wouldn't it be?
I mean, you would have to have engines on the side of the rocket.
Yeah. Right? Or yeah. wheels and land it like an airplane. And then we could change the name from Starship to Space Shuttle. How about that?
Or it could just be a giant slide and it just kind of
Yeah. Mm. Just like smooth out a mountain in Nevada somewhere. Just like have it. put like one of those things, like a slip and slide down it, but like rocket sized.
Yeah. Right. I like that.
Is now we're thinking, okay. We got all three brains working here.
Yeah, honestly, I think the answer to that is basically like Joe is right. Like you'd be adding more engines, which are only for that, which is more weight. You also have to have like piping and everything going to those engines, which is more weight. Like why not use the existing hardware that you have already on the vehicle, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was 99% a joke.
But the force going through the rocket, you know, on a different axis too, it probably isn't the best idea either, because now you have to design your rocket able to handle forces horizontally and laterally under thrust. So
Now, yeah. Joe, that was a cool graphic. Is there any way that you could determine the owner of that graphic? Like, is there any non-fungible way to know exactly who owns that?
Okay, so the band Kings of Leon.
Yeah.
They are going to be the first band to release an album as an NFT, which is a non-fungible token. So this is what I was talking about teasing at the beginning of the video or the episode. Cryptocurrency is getting into the music space. So this makes me think of when Radiohead released In Rainbows basically for free as a downloadable album and people could just pay what they wanted. So that was like the first one kind of taking advantage of the internet kind of thing. Maybe not the first one, but I remember it making some waves. So Kings of Leon, because they're really relevant, are trying to be the first ones to get into sort of the crypto thing. And I thought this was interesting, especially considering, you know, now that everything is streaming and artists are really struggling to make money nowadays because there aren't like physical things that are being bought. Nobody even buys music on like iTunes anymore, hardly. It's just all streaming services now. And what is it? You get like a dollar for every million downloads or something. It's just this ridiculous thing. So this is a way for them to kind of reclaim their business models and just basically do it off of crypto. I understand very little about this, but I wanted to bring it up because I find it interesting.
Yeah. So, Tim, what do you know about NFTs?
Literally nothing.
Perfect. So
cool, let's all talk about this.
Can I give like my third grade understanding of it, and then
please
we
do.
Can talk about what that means? So it stands for non-fungible token, which doesn't mean anything. So, but that's what you'll hear people say. The idea is that, in the digital space, we don't have a way to truly own something, right? I can make a copy of a thing and now I own it just like you did and I paid nothing for it, whatever, right? Pirate Bay type stuff. It's still out there, all that. A non-fungible token here, this system, I'll call it, is a way of allowing you to have some evidence that you actually own a digital asset, you know, a picture, a video, or whatever. I think I put the link somewhere in there, but there's like Grimes just sold a video for like $6 million or something. So there was like
$6 million worth of digital art.
Right. And so this is kind of a new big thing. I mean, and there's one called NBA Top Shots where there's like footage of LeBron doing a dunk and it's just like the NBA footage that you see, but it was sold for like $40,000. Right. Now this is, it's kind of weird. So the NFTs are a digital crypto way of doing collections or collectibles. So imagine like baseball cards or at the higher end, like fine art. Now you in theory will be able to sell these things later in the future. And the big difference is that unlike in the real world, the example everyone uses, like the Mona Lisa, where we can all go to the Louvre and take a picture of it with our phones, or we can even get a print copy of it. But of course, that is not the same thing as owning the real thing, right? The real thing is wildly special and valuable, whatever. So that's kind of the idea here. They're trying to find a way to allow digital assets, videos, photos, music, whatever, to be technically owned. And, you know, so it runs on the Ethereum blockchain. There's all this technical stuff, but really it's not a new idea whatsoever. It is literally the same concept as a collectible. Just now they're trying to do it here using the Ethereum blockchain. But to me, it's still kind of ludicrous because you don't, like, the actual asset is not at all tied to the thing. What's that, Tim? Mm-hmm.
So I just, I just laughed that you said it. You said ludicrous in the show.
That's why I wanted to talk about it. You're right.
So I guess, yeah, so you don't, I still want to find a way that, like, and maybe this will be the beginning steps of this, is like, Reddit's done a good job lately of, like, if you download an image from Reddit or something, it literally embeds the source in the image when you download it. Like, I think there needs to be a built-in back end to everything. When you screenshot something, when you screen record, when you do something, TikTok is another example. When you share a TikTok, how it embeds the little TikTok logo in the user that created it. You know, like, I think there needs to be a common legal entity like that, so that when people share, for instance, just the other day or just this morning, I saw that NASA spaceflight's video of SN10 blowing up was shared by a news station, and they covered up their watermarks, so they didn't credit them. Like, the least you can do is ask. The next least you can do is, like, credit the person. And the worst thing you can do is just cover up who did it, and, like, but, you know, with no credit. So it's like, it's absolutely insane. Apparently, like, and CNN used my footage and covered up my watermarks and stuff.
There is a thing. I mean, and I was just looking at, in 1983 was when what you're talking about, digital rights management, was created and introduced. And if we all remember, there were, like, CDs where you couldn't copy the CD. And the reason was because they had, like, a little strip on there that just, I don't know, tripped the CD copying machines back in the days when we had CDs to copy stuff. And DRM technology even is still super prevalent around today, where you go to a web page and it's like, oh, this is trying to play DRM-related content, and it just, like, won't allow it. So this technology very much exists in terms of what you're talking about. The idea here is that it's more of a collector's kind of marketplace where you can buy the thing and show that you own it. But by the way, the thing you own is not tied at all to the actual digital asset. So, like, other than someone saying that, like, oh yes, you bought this Grimes video, there's not, like the Grimes video itself doesn't have this embedded in it. That's the thing that to me is stupid, because I could just right click and save the video, you know, and now it's mine. And, So this is really nothing new conceptually. It's just like a new technical implementation is how I would look at it.
Mm-hmm. It'd be so cool if the original, like, source file, like when something gets uploaded for the first time on the internet, like a final video project for us on YouTube or something, when you do that, you embed a token. And then, you know, that one, the very first one that leaves your computer, it's the first time this data has ever been combined in the world, it's sent out with that token built in. Like, that would be really cool. So that it's like, here is the original file, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's the idea behind this, is that this is some way of doing that. I see that, like, as a loosely true thing. Like, it's not super explicit on how you connect those dots. But that's the idea. Now, so there's, like, websites where you can, Super Rare or something, where you can buy these things. There's, like, marketplaces for these NFTs. There's even a YouTuber, what's his name? He was the guy that actually created Twitch. And he's, every single video that gets uploaded to YouTube, he's selling through NFTs. So you can, like, literally buy one of his YouTube videos. And then, you know, potentially, let's say he'd become some big famous YouTuber 10 years down the road, you could, like, sell that for more money. So to me, all of this, like, zooming out more broadly, I think if you consider this a digital asset that people are betting will have money, it's an exotic, scarce asset kind of a thing, versus like a Bitcoin, which is like any Bitcoin is the same value as the other ones. These are like, you know, unique things. I think maybe it's a sign of like what we call a melt up, where people are, instead of a meltdown. So people are like literally looking for all kinds of ways to try to like get on this train and make money and do this thing before it all comes crashing down. Like Joe, you were talking about, you know, how is like the stock market, every like all these things are going like crazy, even though the real world economy is like millions of people are out of jobs. Like we're having to print trillions of extra dollars that didn't exist before, leading to potential hyperinflation. So where can you put your money in a way that is protected, you know, some kind of like a cryptocurrency or something? So the NFT things is really interesting, but to me, it's like nothing new, really.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I just find it interesting, I guess, in the pandemic when these musicians can't be touring and they can't do the shows that are normally their bread and butter, and they're not making any money from sales anymore. You know, it's like this is a new avenue to go in there. We'll see how it goes and how many of them go that direction.
It's like the Beanie Baby craze, kind of, is how I look at it.
Oh, or Pogs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just like...
Wait, craze? Pogs? I have all my fortune invested in Pogs. I assume they're about to tick back up, right?
Yeah.
Any day now.
Well, everything old is new, so, or whatever, right? So...
Yeah,
we
should mention real quick Discord, and I do want to just talk about it really briefly because it could be a whole topic, but our friend Trevor Malman, who is a launch photographer, was in some digital rights drama with a YouTuber who used his videos without his permission, and you know, is profiting off of the video stuff. And it's, you know, it's the difference between like, is this fair use or is this, you know, all that. So it's definitely something that we're still a little bit in the wild, wild west, where I think in the next, hopefully in the next decade or so, we start to get some of that stuff figured out a little bit, you know, a better handle on it, because it is definitely our life. You know, like these are our lives now. Yeah. Everything is digital, digital currencies, digital assets. I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But so many things we're still just trying to figure out.
We still don't know what we're doing, as always. You know?
Yeah.
Just like how it takes us an hour to set up each week. We still don't know what we're doing. Yeah. But yeah, so I think that's it for us, right? What are you guys working
on? I think it's time to wrap up. Should I go?
Yeah,
go for it.
I always go first, but whatever. Monday's video is on metric time. Why don't we have metric time?
Yeah. That's a great question.
Why don't we have metric
Thank you.
Time? Why don't we just do metric time, please?
And if I understand correctly, isn't time based on vibrations in an atom? And
that's what the second has been affixed to, the cesium atom, cesium-133.
Yeah. Right. And that's slowing down, right? So we have leap seconds to account for that.
I don't know about that. I don't talk about it anyway. I go into how we got the calendar that we got. Uh-huh. How the Gregorian calendar works, how it changed from the Julian calendar, and what the French revolutionaries who created the metric system, which was 100% part of the French Revolution or a result of it, tried to do the same with time that they did with everything else, and why it did not work. It's actually pretty interesting.
To correct they you, had, Ben, Andy Law is saying physics doesn't slow down. It's not the atom. It's the Earth's rotation is slightly changing, so we do have to account for the seconds.
Our measurement of it. Fine. Yes. not the atom, but and I was looking, so that's the difference between atomic clocks in what's called precise time and imprecise observed solar time. So those are the differences. So we have leap seconds that are applied to correct for that, right?
Yeah
Kind of wild. I love that topic.
It's way more complicated than you think it is when you really start digging into it.
Did you get into, what was it was like, what year was it where we just had a September with only like 6 days or something? Because I think maybe that's when the Gregorian calendar or something came into being. It was like, oh, we've been miscalculating. We forgot about all this extra time. So we have to just like...
I explained how that happened.
That's fun.
But it was, I think, 1752. That was basically when Britain and the American colonies finally got on board with the Gregorian calendar, which was like
150 years after it was adopted in the rest of Europe, or in the, you know, it took that long to get over there. But yeah, it was like Benjamin Franklin lived through it, and he wrote down something, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, it's very nice for an old man to go to bed on September 2nd and wake up on September 14th.
Yeah.
Cause they just dropped 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the funny, the only reason I know that is because when you're learning, well, I don't know what people learn now, but when I was in college learning, Unix programming, you do this thing where you write all these commands to come up with the number of days in a month, and they ask you to do it in that year. And it's a gotcha, because it's like, why the hell are there only like 12 days in this month? Like, my code must be wrong. And it's like, no, actually that month had this big thing. Like
that needs a sad trombone.
Oh yeah. Tim, are you doing any more videos, or now that you got the studio set up, I want like a studio tour video.
Yeah.
Well, once the studio's not set up, it's just, it's physically a space, but all the gear is getting upgraded here. So it's going to be, there's still going to be another couple weeks, waiting for gear to arrive. And then we're going to be doing some like legit build out, you know. So far the only thing that's a studio is I've mounted lights and put a background up, you know. But it'll be, and you know, have like a desk space, but that desk space will completely change when we get a new switcher, new networking gear. We're going to be bonding to business lines for internet here, because we don't have great internet out here. We don't have fiber or anything. So yeah, it's going to be a whole hefty build out and situation. So
nice.
Yeah.
All
right. Yeah. But the switcher, I will, you know, because it's, go ahead.
I was going to say, the switcher you're using, is it one of those ATEM like pro things or whatever?
Yeah, so right now we're using a Blackmagic ATEM Television HD, which is only 8 inputs, 4 of them SDI and 4 of them HDMI. And then we have to add more inputs by using an ATEM Mini, one of those little guys, to be able to input more, because we have more than, we have like 8, or we have like 12 things that need inputs right now. The next switcher we're getting is, so that can only do HD. The Mini can actually do 4K. But the next switcher we're doing is 48 4K inputs.
Jeez.
So we'll have no problem running whatever we want in the future, you know, future proofing. So it actually can do 8K. It's actually an 8K switcher, but it can only do 12 8K channels. So if in the future we want to do 12K switching, or I mean 8K, we can do that. So
there you go.
Yeah.
And see, Joe, I mean, Joe just learned that plugging his computer into the Ethernet port can help him. So, I mean, you guys are pretty close, and, you know, you're...
Yeah, we're right there.
Yeah, no, it'll be nuts, and it's I can't wait for it to all be done and more set up and more reliable, and just, you know, that's the idea, is, like, I want this thing. I know I'm pulling a little bit of a SpaceX, like, as soon as we get something kind of working, we're already on to the next thing, and, like, then we're trying to figure that one out. You know, so it's like never actually just stable and working. Like it's always in a state of upgrade. But I think, you know, at least we're upgrading the backbone of the whole thing first and getting that solid, absolutely rock solid. And then once it's absolutely rock solid from there, it just gets better, you know? So.
Nice. Yeah. I'm excited to see it, man.
What about you?
I don't know. I have no idea. I do the podcast and I go play golf. That's my life now. I think that's all I got.
Can we switch?
Well, you do the podcast, so that counts. Yeah, no. So, so what is next week? The second. I think next week the idea is to publish the 1 year review of the water panels, which was actually at the end of January. Right. So I have the data on that, all that. I want to go Mr. Beast with the thumbnail, because the title idea was something like generating 50,000 bottles of water on my roof or something like that, or how I created 50,000 bottles of water in my roof for free. Yeah, something. And I wanted to have like a picture of me sitting in like a giant field of plastic bottles. But I don't know how I could pull that off without just Photoshop it or something.
You'll get hate comments before people even watch it about like, look how wasteful you're being in the plastic and the oceans.
And you'll get the opposite. You'll get people like, phew, you didn't even like just waste 50,000 bottles of plastic just for a thumbnail. Come on. This is clickbait. Like,
because there's no copy and paste function in Photoshop or anything.
So that's the plan there. I've got a bunch of other big videos lined up that I'm trying to do. So, but yeah, for now, I think that's the only one on the radar.
Cool.
Well,
I'm excited.
Well, good to see your faces, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry for the late start time. You know, sometimes Starship gets stuck behind a giant crane waiting to
come sometimes home. Sometimes that does happen.
It literally took an hour and a half to go from two miles.
That sucks.
They're walking. Well, the guy that controls the crane is literally walking next to it, you know, like, and that's
pushing it.
Hilarious, but,
you know, being from,
yeah, just
living in Southern California for now, that's actually not that bad. You
know, yeah. An hour and a half for 2 miles. That's daily traffic.
All right. Let's do this. All right, guys. So we'll see you in.
Ludicrous future.
Hey guys, thanks so much for watching and for listening. We really do appreciate it. We couldn't do it without you.
Yeah, and if you want more of us, you can consider becoming a Patreon member where you can get early access to episodes, you can listen to us record live, join our awesome Discord community, or get your name in the show credits.
So head over to olfpod.com/Patreon to learn more. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.